Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I've got advice on handling the media. For one head coach who has never needed anybody's help in that department, Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. I'm here. David's here. Heath's here. Everybody's here. Y'all are here. Let's talk college football. There's actual breaking news other than Coach Prime's talking 2025 NFL draft. Believe me, we'll get to it. There is other news, including a guy that I've described as a game wrecker. Trevor Etienne, he got ink on his fingers. And like, maybe the worst. You know what Trevor Etienne should have been doing? Like, Trevor Etienne should have been stealing crab legs. Do you know how much better it would be for Trevor Etienne if he would have been swiping crab legs? Like, pick any, like, knucklehead. It was a crime. And maybe you were on the wrong side of the bars for a few hours. Bail, bond, I don't know the difference always. But crab legs would have been awesome. Instead, it was DUI, reckless this, casual that. He had a couple of other misdemeanors, but he got felonies. So that happened. But when I say, hey, I've got advice on handling the media for Deion Sanders, folks, I go back with Deion. I mean, I never knew him when he was a prep star in Fort Myers. But I do remember, do you remember, what? Well, if you're not of a certain age, like David can't remember this, but Deion was an OG in one very important way, and then a lot of other people started following. Because college athletes, you couldn't take money and then go play your sport. Do you know what? Deion was one of the first to realize, on at least a, like, we're all paying attention national level, because Deion went to Florida State, and he was just a monster. He was returning kicks, he was returning punts, he was playing D-back, he was committing a personal foul in the end zone to take away the Sugar Bowl from Auburn. Not that I still remember. But Deion was, like, everybody said, who's number two? And then you're like, oh, that's Deion Sanders. And then after a while, Heath, you grew up in Florida. Like, it went from who's that to Deion Sanders to Deion. Like, at Florida State, it had already been shortened to Deion, correct?
Yeah, it was either Deion or primetime for sure.
Absolutely. And so while Deion was at Florida State, he got drafted by the Yankees, and he was getting broke off. He was getting paid to play baseball for the Yankees, and he would play, I guess, at spring training during their spring break at Florida State, but he would play during the summer. He played minor league baseball for the Yankees. First autograph I ever got from Deion, because I was a huge Deion fan back in the day, it was a picture of him in spring training in a Yankees uniform walking to home plate, and he had signed it. It was a color, just like a color photo somebody took with a 35mm. He had signed it in blue Sharpie, Deion Sanders, and the S he turned into a dollar sign. And I thought that, like, I don't know, he had gotten the polio vaccine. I had never seen something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, the look at me inside that man. And that's exactly what Deion was about. So Deion figured out how to, like, get around that. Now, there were others, and we saw Chris Winkie and Quincy Carter and, like, a bunch of folks decided, I'm going to go play baseball, and if it doesn't work out, then I'll go back and play college football, and we'll see how this goes. Deion is running track, playing football, but he's not playing baseball at Florida State. And if you weren't professional in your sport that you were on, well, you can stay on scholarship and play. So Deion was getting money. I've always been a huge fan of Deion Sanders. And he has always handled the media, even while in the moment. You know what's true about Deion since he first became famous? What's true about Deion is almost from the start, he has always been someone that we've looked at and said, now Deion. And almost always later, we've come around. Deion was this loudmouth and the gold jewelry, which he talked about in the Sports Illustrated. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated his rookie year, and he said, I want to wear so much gold that it'll blind the people that I go in to sign the contract with. They need to know I don't need their money. Deion, brash, doesn't even come close to it. And I love Deion. The older establishment looked at Deion and said, now, young man. Do you know what after, I don't know what, maybe five seasons with the Falcons, do you know what Deion pretty publicly said? You're not big enough for me. Do you know how rare that was? Now, by the way, he was right. And as I recall, did he go Niners, then Cowboys?
Believe that's correct.
Yeah. Do you know why? This was the first time I'd seen this. Do you know why the San Francisco 49ers signed Deion? They signed him to cover Michael Irvin in January. Like, literally, the only reason they wanted Deion Sanders. We need somebody to cover that guy in the playoffs. I think the Knicks signed Latrell Sprewell back in the day to cover Reggie Miller in the playoffs. Like, you do this sometimes when you think you're that close. I mean, darn, they weren't right. Deion went public. Do you know how unusual it was for a pro athlete who was barely not even a rookie anymore? He only played like 4 years. He was like, y'all aren't big enough for me. I got to go somewhere bigger. And Deion was right. So I've been a huge, huge, huge fan of Deion. Think about like how he presents himself. He had a phrase. We had him on CSS back in the day, Comcast, and he said, look good, feel good. Feel good, play good. Play good, pay good. He said that's his whole thing. He said that's why I took so much care in the sweatbands and the streamers and the flag football look. He's like, in my visor, he said, everything I did, he said, I would lay my uniform out on the floor of the locker room and just visualize it. He said, and then it would be time to get dressed and play. He said, I always wanted to look good because you feel better. When you feel better, it's like I've been a huge fan of Deion. Deion has always had folks looking at him saying, you're getting this wrong, Deion. And then he has always turned it around where later we're like, no, actually, yeah, I'm kind of a fan. I like Deion. My advice on handling the media, it may actually have some value because that uninterrupted string of, oh, Deion wins us over, it started to list a little bit when he got to be head coach at Jackson State. And when you heard some of his speeches, and then you saw that when he got the job at Colorado, he basically strip-mined the program. You realize that at some level, Deion, like there's a percentage that he's about Deion. And that's where the needle is now. How much of this is about Deion? And as long as that's the case, we're focusing on Deion and what we think about him and Coach Prime. And as long as what Deion is doing is then affecting our opinion of him? He's a grown man. He knows what it is. My advice would be, don't make people root for your son to fail. I can't believe that I'm using this as any sort of comparison for a guy I've been a fan of for 35 years. Don't be LeVar Ball. Don't be exclaiming out, I'm the one that made Lonzo. Don't make the story about you. If you haven't seen his comments, Deion Sanders has stated that the boiled down version, his son Shedeur Sanders and Colorado player Travis Hunter, they will choose the teams they play for in the NFL draft. It will, quote, it will be an Eli. This will not be the traditional standard NFL draft. We're going to make sure that there are some cities they understand, quote, it ain't happening. It's certain cities that ain't going to happen. It's going to be an Eli. He has already said he doesn't want a son, quote, going nowhere cold via the draft. Shedeur still has a season to play, by the way. So does Travis Hunter. I know we're in a different era, but I'll actually use Colorado. There was a linebacker there about 20 years ago, Jayshon Sykes. And his second to last season at Colorado, I looked at him and I was like, brother, that's it. That's an NFL linebacker. Well, he got that NFL thing swirling around in his brain. And by the way, there's hundreds of other kids I could tell you about. And I think it affected his play to the point that, like, it really affected his opportunities in the NFL and never really happened for him. There is, like, Nick Saban's big phrase, be where your feet are. Be where your feet are. Your feet aren't in, where's the draft next year? Do we know? Charlotte, Chicago, Glendale?
We'll look it up. It's Detroit this year, but I don't know next year.
Don't be in Glendale or L.A. or Vegas or Houston in April of 2025. Be on the field in Boulder right now. Be on the field in Boulder every Saturday. You got a home game. Be on the field in Lubbock. Be on the field in Waco. Be on the field in wherever. Don't be at the draft location in 2025, especially if you
won't know the draft location until 2026, until May.
Don't do it. All right? That would be my advice. And for Deion Sanders, he's talking about his son, Shedeur Sanders, and two-way star, cornerback wide receiver Travis Hunter. They will decide where they go in the draft a year from now. Quote, I know where I want them to go, so at certain cities, not going to get them. Says he doesn't want him going anywhere cold. He has said that certain cities that fit will be our priority. He has mentioned San Francisco, Dallas, Washington, and Baltimore. Aren't Washington and Baltimore, don't get cold? Whatever. There were certain cities that fit for me, Deion said about being drafted by the Falcons in 1989. Atlanta fit, and I want that for my kids. All right, Atlanta fit. He also didn't sign until the Thursday before the opener. Like, so it only fit once the money was right. I was here, Deion. He says he thinks that Shedeur and Travis Hunter will both be selected among the top four picks. He says one of them will go first overall. I don't know if that's true. I mean, we're a year out. If you want to go Google your computer before the year that Matt Barkley, like his last season at USC, like there were draft projections that he would be the first overall pick. Now, that was just, I don't know, a projection and a measuring tape and, you know, all kinds of things changed based around football for Matt Barkley. Might have been in that same draft. You want to see some kind of Sean Oakman was this guy that played at Baylor. Go Google image Sean Oakman Baylor, and you'll see a guy that you're like, why isn't that guy a five-time Pro Bowler? He also was projected as maybe the first overall pick a year from then. So I'll just say a lot can happen in a year. But right now, ESPN, their projections have Shedeur as one of the top three quarterbacks in the draft next year, and Hunter one of his top three corners. So they're both. Did y'all watch Shedeur? I don't know how anybody. This is a college football show. If you listen, you watched Shedeur last year. Now, I saw, I'm going to give you a disclaimer, and this is actually a credit. I saw that kid get blasted. I mean, absolutely lit up. He didn't turn the ball over. Like, that is a tough. Now, I've said this before. Last thing I want to find out about my quarterback is how tough he is. That's a tough kid. And usually you develop some pretty bad habits. He didn't. Now, taking the sack is not what you want to do. I don't want my guy taking hits, maybe throw it away. Well, whatever it's worth, he still completed like 70% of his passes. He just didn't turn the ball over very much. So he could be a stud at the NFL level. I don't know that. I'm not a quarterback coach or a scout, but just based on what you see and how you get to numbers on Saturday, kid looks like he knows what he's doing. Travis Hunter, I think he's a corner more than a wide receiver. I don't know. Heath, you're a Colorado fan. What's Travis Hunter on Sundays?
I think he's a real good possibility to be a wide receiver. Okay. I like him as a corner, but I think the things he shows as a receiver, I would not be surprised at all if there's a team that likes him more as a receiver than a corner at the end of this thing.
Do you know why I say corner? Do you remember Malcolm Mitchell at Georgia? He was told you will be a first-round pick at corner. Like there's about five shutdown corners in the league. There's 15 or 20,000-yard receivers, and so believe me, you can get broke off, you can get paid as a receiver, as a corner if you're one of the real short list elite guys. So it may be a finances thing. I don't know. I like him as a corner just because of the scarcity of it. Point is, they'll both be first-round picks given health and something really unforeseen not happening. But Deion Sanders coming out and putting the attention on him and his comments, not about himself, but about his son and another one of his players. Deion has always known what he's doing with the media. Since he has gotten certainly to Boulder, there have now been some moments where we've looked at him and went, He just said he walked in and told 85 kids, you may want to graduate because I'm bringing in, like, I was like, oh. Did we look at that a year later with the same sort of cocked eyebrow? See, I don't think we did. So maybe he will a year from now be saying, my gosh, Deion's in charge of the draft. I just don't think so, and I don't want it to be something like LaVar Ball where we start rooting against the kid because of what the dad's doing. All right, we're going to break. Jump into it next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's Monday on Chuck Oliver Show, and I appreciate everybody coming here. We're going to talk college football and do it all day. Connor Riley, Dog Nation, that's Brandon Adams' thing, isn't it? Yeah, Connor Riley's going to join us again. Trevor Etienne, he got a Dewey. Reckless driving, other misdemeanors. Oh, Trevor. So it's just not a good thing. Did you see the Michigan defensive line coach resigned? He got an operating while intoxicated. You're out, brah. Now, I will say, like, Tom Brady... By the way, just dirty as all get out at New England. Those footballs were deflated. They cheated. He used advanced information. That's all alleged, I'll say, but that's my firm belief. I think Bill Belichick did the same. Do you know why we all think less of Belichick? Because he's management. Like, since the history of forever, literally in every industry, we have always had different expectations, labor versus management. So Trevor Etienne gets a DUI and, like, we'll work with you. And then the coach gets the DUI. Well, you're the adult. You're out. Jerod Hamilton, we're going to talk a little Mizzou. They've been done for a week. So he's from Rivals. And the Hunt Palmer, 104.5 monster there, ESPN Baton Rouge. We'll talk a little LSU. When college football's great divide happens, I think there's one factor that, unfortunately, will be over-considered. And here is the great divide. We are currently at 18 teams, and feel free to correct my math, but I think we're at 18 teams for the Big Ten, and we are at 16 for the Southeastern Conference. Well, those are the, I've said, think AFC, NFC sort of stuff, okay? So AFC, NFC, like we're going to have two big giant conferences, and then out of each conference, one will emerge and we'll have the college football Super Bowl. That's what we're eventually headed to. And because of numbers involved and the fact that one of them's at 16, one of them's already at 18, I think the number they're going to settle on, and there's a few more seats on the boat, maybe the exact right number of seats on the boat, but whatever they're called, Big Ten, Southeastern Conference, whatever. Half the monsters, the other half. If the number we settle on is 20 in each, you're looking to add six more programs. Now, Notre Dame obviously would be one of them. I'm talking about when we get to the Great Divide, like 2031, 32-ish or so. Notre Dame would be one, and so you got about five spots left. Can we go back to last week when I said, hey, folks, if you want, take out your pen. Start naming really valuable college athletic department properties outside of the current Big Ten and SEC. I came up with like four. When I say the Great Divide, this is when we say, all right, new structure, 20 in Big Ten, 20 in the SEC, and we're going to add until we get to 20. And to balance this with geography, we've decided Arizona State, Colorado. Wazoo's looking around going, us? No, not you. I don't know, BYU maybe? When college football's great divide happens, the factor that will be over-considered will be geography. Geography should not have anything to do with adding the required number of teams. If you go back and look, they just don't do it as well west of Texas. 2004, January of 05, USC wins the national championship. It was vacated. Other than that, Ain't a school west of Texas won a national championship since 1998. Not one, not one, not one, not one west of Texas. Why are we scheduling championship games in Santa Clara and Glendale and L.A.? Why are we almost throwing a cinder block on the scale to make two fan bases travel 3,500 miles? I'm on record. Screw that. Until the West actually reestablishes itself, every national champion, like Vegas, maybe you're the exception. Everything else, Texas and East. And as far as expansion, yeah, you're going to lay in more Southern-based teams with North Carolina, etc. So don't be thinking that we need geography to balance this out. It's just not what they do. If you were starting a new hockey league in North America, you wouldn't say, well, we need half the teams south of Oklahoma City. Don't let geography be part of this, folks. Look at who values college football and where they really want it.
One of the things I'm going to be fascinated about is, will we ever just acknowledge that college football needs to be its own separate universe at this point than anything else? Because you have rivalries, you have things that matter in other sports that are getting completely destroyed by what we've got going with the football side of things. And so if we're going to have whatever the college football breakaway, super league, whatever you want to call it, is it just for football? Like, can we keep the ACC for basketball while having North Carolina go play in the Big Ten or the SEC or whatever? Nobody's going to want Duke. No one wants Duke for football. Duke's been okay in football the last year or two. Congratulations, Delco. Nobody wants Duke as a football
player. Does anybody want Miami?
I don't know that anybody does, because Miami, again, is living off of 20-plus years ago what they once were, not what they are. I just wonder if there's going to be a way where somebody finally says, look, football's completely out of the picture for everything else. Let's go back to conference alignments that make sense for baseball and volleyball and all the other sports, and let you have your rivalries there. And football is its own universe, because you're absolutely right, Chuck. It is. The West Coast for football. Oh, the magical sunset at the Rose Bowl. That's all great, but they're not relevant. They're not.
Does Florida have like a ladies lacrosse team that plays in the Big 12 or something?
I don't know where they play, but they do have a lacrosse team.
Okay, yeah. And so you know what you do? You join up with a conference where they actually play that, and they care about it, and they invest, and they have a league, and, you know, the other schools actually have lacrosse teams too. I think it was the Florida ladies lacrosse team is maybe a Big 12 competitor this season.
Now more college.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.
Football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Not trying to be funny, folks. I'm glad that he was simply arrested and it wasn't something bigger. Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. We talk college football. Been doing it 10 years, 9 states, 66. It is what we do. I was talking about Trevor Etienne, and he got a DUI. He got a few other charges, reckless driving. Apparently he had something covering up, I don't know, a local motion sticker, something on the windshield to reduce visibility. So he got a couple of misdemeanors. But he got DUI, and that's the big one. And because it's at Georgia and he's a football player, well, it's even bigger. And it is. It's serious. But like I said, compared to what it could have been, I'm glad it was just an arrest, and he has been out. He has been released. So there's a lot to talk about on the field, and I promise we're going to do that as well. From Dog Nation, it's Connor Riley. Connor, welcome back. How are you, friend?
Hey, Hey, Chuck, glad to be on with you once again.
All right. If it's the middle of the day on a Sunday and you get breaking news about a Georgia Bulldog player, that probably isn't great stuff. Talk about Trevor Etienne and what you think the outcome. I mean, it's so early and he's just been charged as well. But, I mean, Kirby can't be happy about this.
No, he can't be. This is since January of 2023, the sixth driving-related arrest that Georgia, the football program, has had. And obviously, in still the wake of the tragic passing of Devin Willock and Stafford Chandler LaCroy, this arrest looms large. Look, Trevor, DUI, we're still waiting to get the full police report on the matters. But for a program that has had this kind of an issue, it's something that you just can't really have. And, you know, the difficult part is, you know, Trevor had been praised as a leader, buy-in, doing the right things in terms of on the field and what he had been doing and making the transition from Florida to Georgia. Now you have this sort of thing. They were counting on him to be a leader at that running back position. And if history is any sort of indication, he's not going to miss the Clemson game where his brother was coincidentally a star for, because if you get a DUI at Georgia, you will miss one game. And so it's just, you know, for a program that has had too much of this of late, it is becoming more and more of a thing that Kirby Smart unfortunately has to keep addressing. And I know that frustrates him, because on the one hand, I do believe that Kirby's done and said everything he can on the matter to try and fix this. And on the other, it still just seems to keep happening.
I don't know this. I'm not advocating, but Georgia does open against Clemson. Just you look in your crystal ball 5.5 months down the road. Talk about a potential running back depth chart against the Tigers in week one.
If Trevor Etienne is not going to be able to play in this game, it's going to put a lot on a lot of unknown guys. I think Roderick Robinson right now is probably the guy that is going to be Georgia's starting tailback if Trevor Etienne were to miss that game against Clemson, a guy who they flipped from UCLA in recruiting, had some nice moments last year, missed some time with some injuries as well. But again, a really unproven running back there. They do bring in a couple of freshmen. I think Nate Frazier is a guy people are really interested in seeing, but he's not going to arrive on campus until the summer. And so it's a really young running back room, guys that have battled injury in their time at Georgia. And so, you know, that's a big reason why Trevor Etienne is at Georgia in the first place, because of the uncertainty at the running back room. And now for him to just sort of take himself out of that game against Clemson because of this arrest, it is certainly something that is going to frustrate Kirby Smart, undoubtedly.
All right. Well, I think are they practicing again tomorrow maybe, and he's going to talk. When do you expect to hear from Kirby face-to-face, or will you?
We'll hear from Kirby once again tomorrow, and I imagine Trevor Etienne will be a popular topic of conversation, as he has been for the first couple of press conferences, but for obviously very different reasons this time around.
All right, talk about any shakeout from the receivers, because we were all concentrating on the returning studs and London Humphreys, and then I keep hearing Colby's. Oh, yeah, don't forget about Colby Young. So just any receivers that maybe have shined a light on themselves.
Colby Young, I think, is the name to know. A transfer from Miami. Wasn't exactly the biggest name, certainly, like in comparison to Trevor Etienne. And I think they prioritized London Humphreys out of Vanderbilt a little bit more. But when you see this guy on the practice field, he's listed at 6'3", 220 pounds. He's a good bit bigger than that. And the encouraging thing from that we've seen from Colby, and we've heard about Colby, it seems like every practice he has at Georgia, he gets a little bit better. Now, part of that is because he's been dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury prior to the start of spring practice. But for a Georgia program that has a lot of question marks at wide receiver, especially losing Ladd McConkey to the next level, to bring in a guy like Colby Young and for him to seem like such a hit already, I think is very encouraging, especially when you have a quarterback like Carson Beck.
All right, this may be nuance, this may be feel, but tell me what's ahead for Mikel Williams, because after I got just a little brief glimpse of him, I said, my gosh, superstar, and it turns out playing in the SEC is difficult. Tell me about Mikel Williams. I just really, really talented kid. Tell me what you think's ahead for him.
Yeah, Mikel will be the first to tell you he did not have the year that he thought he was going to have last season. You know, leads Georgia in sacks as a freshman, but kind of took a small setback last season. They're going to move him to more of a more natural edge rusher position this season, and the hope is that in doing that and letting him be a little bit more of a pinback pass rusher rather than a guy that sets and holds the edge as they often like in the Georgia defense, you're going to be seeing a more productive version of Mikel Williams. He is obviously a star-studded athlete, a guy who has an NFL type body, and I think he's got the skills to be an impact player on this Georgia defensive line. You look at recent history, you know, Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, Devontae Wyatt. Most of those game records that Georgia have been on the interior part of the defensive line there. I think they're really counting on Mikel Williams this year to be an impact defensive player. He's just going to do it at that edge position, defensive end position, because of his body type.
All right, let's talk Cruden. Stay on the defensive line. Five-star Justice Terry. He's a kid from Georgia. He has flipped, for whatever it means, on March 25th, he has flipped to Southern Cal. Is this just a detail for Kirby and we'll go get another one, or did this kind of get his attention?
This is both. They're going to recruit more elite defensive linemen, but this is also the sort of thing that Kirby has talked about of late, where you can stress development to these recruits all you want, but when a program like USC, which obviously has a very attractive NIL arm, makes these kinds of offers to kids, it can be tough to compete. Now, Georgia's going to keep doing that. They have a very competitive NIL program themselves. This is not the first time that USC has tried to come into Georgia and win recruiting battles. You know, Mikel Williams at one point was committed to USC during his recruiting process when he was a five-star prospect. He ultimately ended up at Georgia. I expect Georgia to continue to recruit Justice Terry and really make a push for him. Isaiah Gibson, another guy from the Warner Robins area, somebody else who committed to USC over the weekend. It's very early in the recruiting process, and even I think you saw last year with KJ Bolden, they're going to, you know, understand that they're going to have to go the distance with some of these guys, and it's going to be a contested recruitment. But you know, you can, and Kirby understands this, you can clench your fists all you want, but at the end of the day, Georgia still signed the number one class in the country last season, so they're doing something competitive with NIL, and I would expect, while, you know, obviously you don't want to have this happen in the first place, I would expect them to still be very competitive in Justice Terry's recruitment.
All right, well, let's look even further down the road, because there's a kid, Jared Curtis, out of Nashville. He's a four-star quarterback, and he has said week one, 2.5 years from now, fall of 26, I'll be a freshman and I'll be at Georgia. Talk about Jared Curtis and his recruitment, because he's committed.
Yeah, this was a little bit of a surprise on a Saturday afternoon. I think a lot of people have been looking at the 2025 Georgia quarterback recruiting class and seeing how that was going to shake out. And now you go in and land Curtis, who by all indications is seen as the early contender to be the number one player in the position for that 2026 recruiting cycle. Out of Nashville, big body, already listed 6'3", 6'4", yep. 225 pounds. So he could theoretically keep growing, and you maybe see him in that, you know, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen type mold of just a massive guy there at that quarterback position. So it's a very interesting ad at that point in the calendar, but when a guy like this wants to commit to Georgia, I think you take that. I think he fits when you look at what Carson Beck has done, Ryan Puglisi, the quarterback they brought in last cycle. There's sort of a trend or type forming of what Georgia is looking for in their quarterbacks, and I think Jared Curtis fits that to a T. And well, obviously there's going to be a lot of twists and turns that come with his potential recruitment. I think the fact that Georgia saw that it could get in with him now when schools like Ohio State are recruiting him as well, I think this was a, if you want to come here, we want you to be here. And so it is a good fit right now. Even as you point out, though, long way to go before he sees time on campus.
Last question, Connor Riley, Dog Nation. All right, so I'm just fascinated by one kid on the roster, because you're right, and even Raiola, big giant, like, you know, monster quarterback. What about Gunnar Stockton? Because he's kind of the outlier here, and he's a Georgia kid and a Georgia fan, and he got the relationship with Bobo and all of this, and I'm looking around going, dude, only one quarterback plays. Tell me what you think's ahead for him. What do they think about Gunnar? Is he a ball player? And then what happens?
Yeah, so Gunn is a really interesting test case here, because, again, he is not in that Carson Beck, Ryan Puglisi mold. And I think even watching these guys throw at practice, the ball does not come out of his hand with the same level of velocity or throw power that it does with Beck and Puglisi. I think with Gunner, one, when you talk to teammates, when you talk to people around the program, they rave about his intangibles. I'm not comparing him to Tim Tebow in terms of what he can do on the field, but that sort of same type of galvanizing leader off of it. The other thing, I think that this is just a guy that when the lights come on and he's in a game situation, he just sort of elevates his level of play. That's not to say that he's not a good practice player, but when he can actually get hit and take a hit, I think that sort of elevates the level of play for him. He's going to be Georgia's backup quarterback this year. Georgia is going to look at bringing in guys via the transfer portal when that April window opens up, but they're really interested in seeing what sort of strides Gunner makes this season, because with Carson, you know, there was a time people wondered if he was ever going to see the field at Georgia, and I think the 2022 season when he was Stetson Bennett's clear backup, he really made a lot of strides that season and impressed people behind the scenes. And so now he's seen as one of the top quarterbacks in the country. I think Georgia is hoping that Gunnar Stockton can do something similar in a similar role this year.
We may tweet out, Connor Riley says, Gunnar Stockton, quote, modern day Tim Tebow. We may go with that. All right. Connor, appreciate your time, friend. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Chuck.
All right. He is that type of, hey, let's, like, the kids, if there was going to be a kid named Gunner, it's kind of, you know, it fits. And he's not a huge kid either. I mentioned Bobo. I want to say, was it Mike, but was it George Bobo? Maybe his high school coach and personal quarterback coach and had the relationship and he was going to go to South Carolina. Ah, dadgummit, I want to ask him about Will Muschamp. Heath, do you know what Will Muschamp, we just had a Georgia expert, do you know what Will Muschamp's actually doing?
He's officially an analyst, but what that means, pretty much show up in the office whenever he wants to, seems to be the general gist of things.
So he's like 51, 52-ish, like he and Kirby are boys. They're basically the same age, right?
Yeah.
He's not done coaching at 50, is he? He's not done with this whole life, and I'm just going to watch film. But on Saturdays, I don't, you know, like, he can't be done, can he? You know him. He doesn't have that gene where I'm just going to lay back.
I wouldn't think, but in the case of Witt, his son, he's going to be at Vanderbilt, I guess, as a quarterback. So supposedly wants to go and see him play a little bit, or at least possibly play to get his games. And, again, when you've got the kind of coin that Muschamp has, you don't have to have any kind of pressure. The other thing, too, is, look, his whole career, basically, he's been either a head coach or right on that list of guys who are about to be a head coach. And I think he may have realized now, hey, that's not going to happen again. You got your cracks at it, and it didn't work out. I mean, if he's willing to take some MAC job or something, I guess maybe someday
he could be Terry Bowden.
But I think if you realize, all right, well, I can go coach safeties anytime I want, but there's no particular reason I need to be continuously on the wheel at all times. I could see why he might feel like, I'll take a year or two away. Why not?
If he can do like an extended version of Matt Luke, maybe, because Luke was only gone, was it two seasons or a year and a half? Or so he's like, okay, I'm back in.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good comparison.
Maybe you just do need to take it, just freaking exhale.
Well, remember too, Chuck, when he went there, this was what he was supposed to be doing when he went there.
Absolutely.
And then because of Scott Cochran,
that's right.
They put him on the field a lot quicker than he'd originally intended to.
Yeah, because he got the going away prize from South Carolina. So you're right. The thing is not about money. No, but the money is still really good. But the difference in quality, I'll say quality of life, lifestyle, daily schedule, it is 179 degrees away. Like, you can't even compare. And if the money's already right, I get that. Like with Muschamp, he is one of the, in an industry full of them, he is of the particular short list intensity of the competition, and I want to defeat someone. Coaches like finishing with, like, Ralph Friesen. I mentioned him last week. He liked finishing with more points than the other guy. That was kind of, he just loved it. I think Will Muschamp loves beating people. I mean, he really does. So you don't get that by, you know, there's two lines at Publix and I picked the one that was, you know, that's just not what it is. So, but if he's really done, okay, good for him and good for his kids and wife and everything else. All right, we break. We wrap up hour one next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
It is competitive. There's intensity. There's a little different level of focus with this group. You know, I think there's a healthy respect between the offense and the defense, and I think we're making progress there. We're building culture. I think we can compete and still become, you know, come back together and be a team.
Billy Napier. I'm a fan of his. I like him a lot. I know he's a good coach. Here it comes. He says a lot of things like, I want lower crime and better schools. I listened to it. Yeah, okay. It all sounds, you know, he says continuity among the coaching staff. I'm like, well, why haven't you had any? Talking about how valuable. They've had, I think, four or five practices now. He was talking to the media. Some of the more, I'll say, detailed statements he made, talking about injuries, for instance, and they've got an opportunity at linebacker right now, and Pup Howard has been out there running around, and he's trying to make a name for himself. He's talked about the offensive line specifically and the fact that they got two big, giant, huge, massive tackles. Both their tackles may be 6'7" this year, which is why Damian George is going to be a guard, I think. Had a couple of injuries, but nothing that's going to, you know, it wasn't Graham Mertz. So, and it wasn't DJ Lagway. So they're just working their way through spring. And until they get to the season and I see him tackle better, there you go. That's go play a game and tackle better. That's what I need to see. If you want something like a brick in that wall, that maybe they're actually building towards it. I don't know what the exact number is. You can go look on the roster if you want, but there's a kid, Jordan Castell, last year. It wasn't perfect. Looks like a ball player. And you know what? That's my difference. There's game wrecker at the absolute. Julio Jones was a game wrecker. All right. Patrick Willis. Y'all remember, nobody ever talks about Patrick Willis because he kind of just did his job and then he went to the league and then his feet hurt. And so he couldn't play anymore. Patrick Willis was a game wrecker at linebacker. Otherwise, mostly you're either a ball player or you're just a guy. And Castell's a ball player, I think. Just so there's a lot of those freshmen coming back from last year, and that's not a normal thing in today's college game where you might have two or three or four freshmen from a position group that are all coming back in a unit, especially, and you know, listening to this show, we talk about it all the time, O-line and secondary, to have maybe four freshmen coming back? Wowzers. And so you've played now on SEC fields against, I don't know, people like Jalen Wright. You know what happens? You get a little better. You played against Dominic Lovett. All right? You played against Juice Wells. Yeah, well, I think Wells was injured by that time. But you played against, elite guys. And so even if you're hanging on for dear life back there, you're back, and you might be playing for some of the same coaches, not Corey Raymond, but some of the same coaches, and in the same system, in the same place. And I'm familiar with these guys. I know what he does in press coverage now. I know that he might get lost on the crossing route. I know these guys now. It helps. And so if you want something concrete, I'll give it to you. When you have guys that have grown up all just a little bit on the very back end of the defense, you should be a lot better as a tackling team. You should be. Now, if you want to go back, and I don't, maybe it was the 21 season. They had a season recently where they had two senior safeties, and I'm watching them every week take some of the worst angles and do some. Florida tackling in the secondary has been horrid for a few seasons now. Hopefully it'll get better. Heath, how's the Monday?
So, Chuck, earlier you were talking, obviously, about a variety of things with Georgia there with Connor Riley, and one of the things that came up was Justice Terry, the five-star defensive lineman who flipped from Georgia over to the Trojans. There's another commitment this weekend that got my attention. Hilton Stubbs chooses the Trojans as well. He is out of Jacksonville, reportedly chose the Trojans over Florida, Miami, and FSU. And
ouch.
He's a top 70 recruit in the class of 25, according to the folks who do such things. And so if I'm Alex Grinch and I'm just minding my own business coaching safeties at Wisconsin, I think I'm saying all these people are like, why can't you fix the defense? Why can't Grinch fix the defense? I think if I'm Alex Grinch, I'm like, you know, if someone had offered me the plan of why don't we go into the South and start dropping bags everywhere we can and see what we can find.
Load up a car carrier full of Escalades and just start dropping them off.
That might have helped fix the defense. That might have been a way to achieve that goal. Look, L.A., especially if you are somebody who's going to L.A. and is going to have access to resources, L.A. is a nice place to be. It's got some glamour and appeal, obviously. Maybe the excitement of being a part of Big Ten Trojan football is part of why kids are looking over there. But as Connor mentioned, it sounds like more NIL packages might have more to do with why suddenly you've got the Trojans coming into the South and helping themselves to some talent. It's legal. I just think it's funny that all this talk about how can we fix the defense? Well, go buy some players. That's how you fix the defense.
Everybody knows there can be poor coaching or counterproductive coaching or at least not very efficient coaching. Then there's having better players. Like Nick Saban, he funniest quote ever. He's like, you're such a great coach, great coach, great coach. He's like, no. He says, I'm really good at coaching really good players. He says, that's what I am. He says, I'm good at coaching really, really good players.
And it sounds like that's what they're going to try and do to fix it. And look, again, who knows? You know, this is March, so there's plenty of time for some people
absolutely
to say we will counter and we will raise. So we'll see whether or not these commitments stick and whether or not this is a long-term strategy. But certainly for the Trojans to get two kids, both four-star or better, out of the South within a weekend tells me that Lincoln Riley and company have said we have to fix this, and we know at our core what we've got to do.
Yeah, George, you know, Kirby may call and just like walk away. I'll wait for the next hand, but it's a 5-star defensive tackle, and it's in his own state. Like losing Derek Brown, you don't do that. Who was it? Aubrey Solomon, the 5-star tackle that went up to Tennessee? Maybe like you don't lose in-state 5-star linemen.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.